is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside the VSIN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Michael Lombardi. We're dealing with a little bit of tech difficulties today, but we're going to work through those things. Michael, how are we doing this morning?
We're doing good, Femi. I mean, we passed through the 50-day milestone, so I'm excited about that. We're getting closer to football and football. I think we're going to, teams will put pads on this week. So, you know, we're back. I think, you know, I've changed. We're no longer in off-season calendar mode. We're in training camp week one mode.
100%. The pads will be popping in due time here this coming week for the NFL. And we do have a fun show on deck for you guys. Before we get into more of the training camp storylines, want to set the table for what we have over the next couple of hours. Starting 45 minutes from now, Wes Reynolds, host of VSIN Tonight and the VSIN Long Shots podcast. He will join us in 45 minutes to break down the Open Championship. We'll also get Wes's thoughts on the Big Ten, not just the NFL today. We're also discussing college football as well, and keeping up with that theme in hour number two at 11:15 Eastern, 8:15 Pacific. Brandon Marcello, college football reporter for 24/7 Sports, will join the program to break down the college football landscape. We're all throughout the media days, SEC media days behind us, Big Ten media days, I should say, coming up this week. But we'll get Brandon's thoughts on what he thinks will happen later on this fall in the world of college football. But Michael, let's get into this NFL training camp stuff, because right now, I guess as bettors, we're all itching to get some football back into our lives. But you've been in the role and the front office mindset of, I guess, what sort of is going on right now as teams prepare to arrive at training camp? They're going to see conditioning tests, all these things. Like, how do you kind of establish a sort of a tone heading into training camp, which is a really important time to get ready for the season?
Well, you know, on one hand, you're excited everybody's back. On the other hand, all of a sudden, you start losing hair in your head because you're worried about injuries now. Injuries are your nemesis, right? You've put together this team. You have about four or five battles in training camp that you're looking into. You want to see how the draft picks are doing. You know, you have two elements working at the same time, right? You want to get your players that are going to participate in week one of the season ready to go. And then you have the young players that you need to evaluate. So you've got preparation and evaluation going on simultaneously, which then creates a little bit of a imbalance on how to prepare the team. And so that navigating that's why I think it's so damn important as a betting network really study head coaches what they look like in the opening game. For example, the last two seasons, Zach Taylor is 0-4 in the first two games of the season. And that's with Joe Burrow, because he takes an approach of, we're going to gradually build this team and not worry about September, finish strong, which he's done in the past. So I think that's kind of the mindset you're going through. How do I get the team ready, but how do I keep it healthy?
So as bettors, how do we kind of take note of these things? Because we don't have the luxury of going to training camp to see if they're practicing intense or if it's more of a load management kind of training camp. Should we be paying attention to what the coaches are saying? Should we be paying attention to what the beat writers are reporting? Like, how do we kind of, I guess, differentiate the hard, intense training camps from the training camps that are a little bit more focused on getting everybody healthy to the regular season and maybe ascending in the second half of the year?
Well, I think what you have to do is look at past performance predicts future achievement, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I think you have to look at coaches that are really good in the opening game. We know John Harbaugh. Look, Andy Reid, you and I both know we're going to have Brett Veach on the podcast tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And we interviewed Brett Veach last week. He's at St. Joe's College like it's 1970 all over again.
He's in the
right?
dorm room. Yeah.
I mean, and he's in a dorm room. I mean, Andy Reid is old school for all the innovation that comes out of his offense. His preparation for his team is hard. I think that's kind of what you have to look at. Like, and then some of these new coaches who are coming in with a softer, gentler approach, I think they're going to get hit in the mouth quickly in terms of what it's going to look like opening day. So I think you have to look at past performance, which predicts future achievement.
Yeah, usually the history kind of gives you an outline as to who's going to come out swinging come opening day. Because like that's the thing, like when people start talking about Survivor or their week one bets, because these week one lines have been out since May, those things get beaten into oblivion by the time we get to kickoff. You want to keep in mind who's actually preparing their team to play in week one. And yeah, like maybe Zach Taylor, his approach is a little bit more on the load management side. It's worked out for them when Joe Burrow's been healthy, but for week one purposes, it hasn't really worked out since they kind of start slow. And then once we get to around Halloween, it's when you see the Cincinnati Bengals really start to turn the corner and they've really gotten into a groove of things in the regular season. So we have five teams who have already reported today, at least the Texans, Bears, Ravens, Chiefs, and the Green Bay Packers. Every team will be at camp by Wednesday the 24th, and I believe everybody will be on the field by the 27th. So in less than a week, we will have all 32 teams on the field, and you mentioned injuries being the key factor here. But on the flip side of it, Michael, because on the outside, we see all the reports from the beat writers of so-and-so looks really good in camp, or this player might be a breakout star this year. Look out for them for your fantasy team or for you prop bettors. Is all of that just noise at the end of the day? Like, what should we really be paying attention to all that stuff? Because we all love the sport. We consume all of the training camp content because we're dying for football. But should we kind of, I guess, take it with a grain of salt?
I think it's a little bit of noise, right? I think you need to take it with a grain of salt. And I think really the guys that we tend not to focus on are the most important players. The last year's draft team, right? That's the players that have been in training camp, went through a season. They have to take the giant mother may I step from last year to this year and really make a huge improvement on the team. I think that those are the players that aren't talked about because new is always best. Mm-hmm. But in reality, those are the ones that have to make the biggest difference on their team, right? They have to come in. For example, Mozzie Smith at Dallas, he's going to have to show that he can play better, right? Because, I mean, when you look at Dallas's team last year, you know, Micah Parsons had 33 pressures. The next closest guy was Osa, and I can't pronounce his last name, with 14. You know, so there's such a discrepancy in terms of who can put pressure on the quarterback. We also know they can't run, that they can't save the run game. They play with the lead so often, Femi, as you know, being a fan of them, they play with the lead so often that they never were really tested in the run game. And yet when they were tested in the run game, they couldn't hold up. So I think that's kind of the approach. You have to go into the season with preseason questions that you're looking at, right? That you want to examine, that you want to study for each team. And, you know, certainly we're going to provide that for you here with the network and on the Lombardi line and with what we do. But Dallas, for example, as you go through their questions and you look at what they're, you know, what they're being, what has to happen for them, you know, that's one of the key areas is who else is going to make an impact to their defensive front with Mike Zimmer in there. The other thing about Dallas, that's, and I don't want to make this about Dallas, but I think they're the perfect example of it, is we talk, the most important stat in football is first half point differential. And Dallas scored 296 points in the first half. They only allowed 172. So they had 124 first half point differential. And then they dominated the fourth quarter, 144-67. So what happens when you're playing with that far ahead of people, no one really wants to run the ball. In the four of their six losses, Femi, they gave up 266, 222, 170, 143, and 125 to Detroit, which they won. The only game that they lost that gave up less than 100 yards was against Miami. Think about that.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that was the bugaboo for the Dallas Cowboys, that front seven, is can they actually stop the run in those competitive games? And if they were ever to get behind, can they really stop the run when the other team is playing on the front foot? We saw that to not be the case for the Dallas Cowboys. They're much more of a front-running defense when they play with the lead, unleash Parsons, unleash Odighizuwa, Lawrence, all these guys, let them get after the quarterback, which they do really, really well. You mentioned the question marks for all of these teams because that's how you want to look at it heading into training camp. How about the Kansas City Chiefs? Because right now, over at DraftKings, the Chiefs, by the handle and by bets, are the most bet-on team to win the Super Bowl, also the most bet-on team to win the AFC. People are predicting, or at least betting, that we might see history this year in the National Football Team, where the Chiefs are the first team to ever three-peat in the Super Bowl era. What are the question marks for the Kansas City Chiefs as we enter their training camp?
They have significant ones, believe it or not, Femi. I mean, they really do. Starting with their offensive line, Wynu Morris, their starting, is he going to be their starting left tackle? Joe Tooney did come into camp. He's not healthy. So the left side of their line is going to be interesting. They drafted Samatata from BYU, Kingsley Samatata. And, you know, is he going to be ready to play? I don't know. And then how good are they going to be at wide receiver? Obviously, having Hollywood Brown was an addition to them. But is Rashid Rice going to get suspended? You know, I think that's a question. Kadarius Toney, we know he hasn't been able to come through. So yeah. I think there's a lot of question marks. And then the one on defense that has to concern Chief fans is Trent McDuffie moving from inside corner, which he was very good, blue chip player there, to outside corner. Can he hold up? And then losing some of the players, losing the luster. Where is Chris Jones going to be in the conditioning period? I think that's going to be the key.
Yeah, Chris Jones at least will be at training camp after last season when he missed all of camp and even missed the first game of the season with the contract impasse. They got that done, and it hurt them a little bit in the regular season, but they finally turned the corner in the playoffs and ultimately won another Super Bowl. But the Chiefs are the team that, can they do it? Can they make the history? Their win total sitting at 11.5. Last year, they won 11 games. Andy Reid with the Chiefs has never gone under his win total, which is really, really impressive with the high expectations that this team has had. They've won 8 straight AFC West titles. They are the king of the NFL. We'll see if anybody can knock them off, but maybe there could be a team in the NFC, perhaps. Could it be the Detroit Lions, who are the most bet team in terms of the handle and the bets to win the NFC? Michael, we got about 40 seconds left, but do you agree with that? The Lions being kind of the front runner here, at least in the betting minds of many folks out there.
Yeah, I mean, look, they added to their defense. They're, when you break this team down, all the question marks were on their defense, and that's where they improved. Now, it's got to take place. Paper-wise, yes. We'll see what happens on the field.
Yeah, it's a lot to like with the Detroit Lions on both sides of the trenches. The defensive line, they've added the DJ Reader, a nice pickup for them on the interior there. We'll see Aiden Hutchinson now in year 3. If he can take another step forward, maybe he becomes one of the better defensive players in the National Football League. And then, of course, a lot to like on the offensive side of the ball here, including their quarterback, Jared Goff. All right, on the other side, we'll play a little bit of GM Translator, some sound bites ahead of training camp here next on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Start your football season off right with our VSiN football special when you sign up before the end of July and get a full VSiN Pro access from now to the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. That saves you nearly 50% off the monthly price. And with this VSiN Pro access, you'll gain access to the daily best bets, exclusive betting splits, proven betting systems and analysis from professional handicappers, 24/7 video content, and our special edition betting guides, including our new NFL betting guide packed with detailed team, division, conference analysis, plus season win totals, futures, props, and awards best bets. Michael wrote in the guide. I wrote in the guide. Many, many other VSiN hosts and analysts also wrote in the guide. It's in-depth coverage. Take advantage of it. $175 before the end of July. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi. Hope everyone's enjoying their Sunday morning. It's not just football on the show. We also have the Open Championship happening. Final round over at Royal Troon, where Justin Rose currently is the leader at 5-under. Behind him, Thurston Lawrence at 4-under, as well as Billy Horschel. But Michael, there is that Scottie Scheffler. He's lingering, just 2 back. And man, I tell you what, like, one of the reasons I have not really been betting golf this year is just because Scheffler feels like he's a little bit unbeatable. We saw him torch the Masters. He's won a bunch of PGA Tour events. But right now, you can get him at 5-1 at DraftKings to win the Open Championship. If I was holding a ticket on one of these other guys that's ahead of him, I would be a little concerned with Scottie lurking, but just 2 back.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, when you're playing at the level that he's playing at consistently and dealing with the elements. I mean, yesterday's weather was atrocious, and obviously Shane Lowry felt the brunt of it, correct? Mm-hmm. And so I think, to me, you know, anytime Scottie's in the hunt, it's a little tigerish, right? I think the other players feel that he's around, and they know he could potentially come in and create a lot of problems for them.
100%, especially guys who have not won it. Like Justin Rose, he's won a major, but he hasn't won in a while. Billy Horschel's out there trying to win a major. It's like Xander Schauffele, who finally broke through and won a major this year at the PGA Championship. He's in the mixes as well. He's 2 back in the pairing with Scottie Scheffler. So you have a couple of those major winners that are lurking just behind Justin Rose, who currently is the leader. But yeah, yesterday I was watching the coverage, and I was like, half the time I couldn't even see what was happening. You saw the raindrops on the cameras and all that stuff. The wind is going, and hey, you're in Scotland on the shores, and I guess even in July you're going to get some of this, I guess, inclement weather a little bit, but those guys are powering through it, and credit to them. They're the best golfers in the world, and we'll see what happens later on today at Royal Trudon. We'll get Wes Reynolds' thoughts on this 30 minutes from now, who he likes to ultimately lift the claret jug and be the champion golfer of the year. All right, let's get back to the National Football League and play a little bit of GM translator, because now that it's training camp time, we're hearing more and more general managers talk, players talk, and we'll start to be able to decipher what they mean in these quotes here. And we'll start off, Michael, with Cowboys COO Stephen Jones, who recently was on the Scoop City podcast talking about all of the contracts that they have on the books, Dak Prescott, Michael Parsons, CeeDee Lamb, etc. Well, here's what Stephen Jones had to say about trying to navigate through these contract waters.
You know, those things just take time when you're talking about the amount of money involved. And, of course, we're trying to a little bit play Houdini and how to keep all these guys around Dak and keep these players we were fortunate enough to draft. And, you know, when you start stacking them up like that, you know, it's a challenge. It's not that it's not doable, but you certainly got to, you know, have some give and take. You know, we got a big one in Dak, and we got Diggs right there, and then you got Zach Martin and D-Law. And so we got a lot of guys making, you know, quite a bit of money. And, you know, it's no excuses. We, you know, we think we can get this done, know we can get it done, but it just takes time.
How would you translate that as a former general manager?
Well, I think right now the way I translate it is the players are asking for more than they're willing to spend. It's a classic negotiation. And I think the question for Dallas is, you know, when are they going to realize what they have to pay? I think Dak holds all the cards. In that conversation, it did not indicate to me that they were, you know, Stephen, the way he said around Dak, meaning that they're going to continue to go down the road with Dak, which obviously is hard not to go down, and considering he's a top 10 player in the league at his position.
Yeah, I mean, he's making it, like you said, it's pretty much classic negotiation of, hey, we're going to try to get these guys done, but right now we're not at an area where we feel comfortable paying them whatever these guys are asking for. I did see a report earlier, and I believe it was from Diana Rossini over at The Athletic, saying that there were some positive conversations between the Cowboys and Dak Prescott. I don't think anything's going to get done with Dak. Could we actually get a stunner here that maybe they come to an agreement with Dak Prescott prior to the regular season?
Well, if they did, it would be a huge for them, Femi, because they're carrying such a huge cap number on them. And, you know, if they redid Dak's deal and was able to lower his cap number down, they could then afford to redo some other guys. It's going to cost more cash, but they could manage their cap a hell of a lot more effectively.
100%, yeah, because like that Dak Prescott cap hit is massive, and if they can just kind of somehow get that down, that would be beneficial for the Cowboys in this 2024 season. Let's move it along to the Houston Texans, of course, coming off of a surprise season a year ago. Many people thought they were going to be one of the worst teams in the league. They ultimately won the division and even won a playoff game, beating the Cleveland Browns in the wild card round. Well, quarterback C.J. Stroud knows that they are now the hunted, no longer the hunter, is what he told the media earlier this week ahead of training camp.
You know, yeah. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be harder. You know, we have a target on our back this year, and, you know, that's how you should want it, you know, and that's what I'm used to playing at Ohio State. And, you know, I'm really, you know, honored and blessed to have the teammates that I do to want that challenge and for guys that want to come and play here, because, you know, this Texan team isn't for everybody. It's hard here. And, you know, we're blessed enough to play a game that we've been playing since we've been kids. So, you know, I definitely do think that all the expectations, if we just work, I mean, everything will take care of itself.
Sounds like he's embracing the fact that, hey, they are seen as now one of the contenders in the AFC.
Yeah, and I think to me, he understands it, but I think it's going to require them to really play at a much higher level. I mean, there's a little bit of a run on these. I'm writing a column for the Daily Coach tomorrow about expectations, and I think these expectations placed on Houston is somewhat unfair, because that when you really break down their season and look at where they were last year, Femi, and even to Stroud, as well as he played, I mean, the fact that he's in the top 10 quarterbacks in the league and Brock Purdy isn't, by this poll that was created by the worldwide leader, is absurd. I mean, you know, I mean, people forget that, you know, when he played, you know, there were some games last year against Carolina, he threw for 119 yards, yeah. You know, they, you know, so I think to me, you got to be really careful. You got to be careful about the level of expectations as you move forward. Did he have a great year? Yeah, but becoming good to great is a lot harder than people think it is.
Oh, 100%. I'm with you right now. Like, we've kind of drawn a little bit of a comparison between Texans this year and Jaguars last year. Now, I don't think it's a one-to-one comparison because there's obviously some differences there, but it does feel kind of similar, just how everyone expected Trevor Lawrence to now be an MVP conversation, the Jaguars to then join the Kansas Cities, the Buffaloes, the Cincinnati's as contenders. And they sort of kind of fell off last year. They only had a 9-8 season and things kind of got off the rails. I'm not saying that that's exactly what's going to happen to Houston this year, but maybe just temper the expectations a little bit, because I think if you look at just kind of the objective opinion of the Houston Texans a season ago, they weren't that good of a football team. Like, kudos to them for winning the South, but I don't think that they were this top-notch team that maybe they're being kind of expected to be in 2024. Now, CJ Stroud can, of course, take a step forward, but I think that maybe a little bit too much is being expected of this team. Like what you said, Michael, it might be a little bit unfair to Houston. Let's move over to the Chicago Bears. We're speaking of expectations. Bears fans have high expectations for this team. The Bears will be on Hard Knocks, the training camp version, coming up in a couple of weeks here. And Caleb Williams is kind of maybe trying to recalibrate some of these expectations this upcoming training camp.
I mean, I've had rough days. I expect myself to go out there. I think I'm the toughest on myself. I go out there and I'll mess up a play. I've thrown a pick in mini camp and things like that. Being tough on myself, but also having an understanding of where we are and where I am, and you know, the progression, like I said before, is key. And those bad times, it's not a time to have self-doubt. That's just a waste of time. It's a time to, you know, keep growing, keep progressing, and keep believing in yourself.
Caleb Williams telling, hey, like, you know, there's going to be times out there where I struggle. I feel like, how would you translate what he had to say?
I think he's as brutally honest as he can be, and you got to love it. I mean, he is going to struggle. I think the bigger question for him is, how quickly can he understand that what happened at SC isn't going to happen in the NFL, and that those loose plays and the ability to move around and move away from people is a little bit different. You know, he's got to protect the football in the pocket. And I just worry about that they put so much pressure and expectations on this team that are somewhat unrealistic. Can he hold up with the two tackle situation that he has? Is the offensive line good enough? I think those are some fair points on this team that you have to really take a hard look at and see, because I think when you break the team down, everybody just assumes that this is a team that's going to just come in the league and just dominate.
Yeah. I think one thing that as bettors and fans, we have to remind ourselves is, like, teams just don't pick up where they left off a season ago. Like, this is a whole nother season, and you got to kind of start from ground zero once again. And I think a lot of people think, well, the Bears won 70 games last year. Now they add Caleb Williams, they add DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, all these guys, and then they're going to win 9-10 games. It's like, it doesn't really work like that in the NFL. Every single season presents new problems, and there could be some new problems that come up for the Chicago Bears. We'll continue GM Translator and get into some training camp specials next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It is hour number two of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. We had a fun first hour. If you missed it, make sure you search the Lombardi Line wherever you get your podcast. You can check it out in podcast form. We have a fun second hour on deck for you guys as well. We'll discuss some college football, something that we haven't done that much throughout the course of the summer, but we're inching closer and closer to the college football regular season. I mean, week zero is a month from now, so college football is definitely now in the forefront of our minds here on the Lombardi Line. Brandon Marcello of 24/7 Sports will help us break down SEC media days as we came and went down there in Dallas. Get his takeaways from what he heard at SEC media days, and maybe some dark horse teams that could potentially make this new 12-team college football playoff. But Michael, before we get into that, I want to update the folks on what's happening over at Royal Troon across the pond for the Open Championship. Scotty Scheffler was two back about 5 minutes ago, but unfortunately he three putts he had a par putt from about 8 feet. He had unfortunately three putts, so now he is four back. He falls to two under. Justin Rose and Billy Horschel are our co-leaders right now at six under.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, when Scheffler misses those putts, you kind of – I thought Wes made a great point. He thinks it's going to be eight under. And when you three putt the way he just did there. You basically remove yourself, and obviously the odds reflect it. You know, getting Scottie Scheffler at 28-1 with 9 holes to play, that's not a good play right now. So, you know, maybe this is going to come down. If it goes to -8 to win it, you know, that's a long way from where we were yesterday. Give Shane Lowry credit. I mean, I think mental toughness is there, because yesterday shooting a 77 on the back nine, shooting a 77 total and having one of the worst back nines you could have. Scottie Scheffler said it was the hardest round of golf he ever had. I'm not sure he'll say that after what he just went through on the ninth.
Yeah, maybe the ninth hole is the hardest hole that he's had. The broadcast was showing him. He looked a little bit dejected. As the golfers, you know, sometimes they get down in the dumps a little bit, but you're only one golf shot away from being right back into the swing of things. So I don't think you can count out Scottie Scheffler, but I definitely wouldn't be putting my money on him at 28-1. That's just is probably not getting the proper price for a guy who's now 4 back with only 9 holes to play. But Scheffler, of course, they're always going to make you pay that Scotty tax since he's a proven winner on the PGA Tour. We'll see who wins this thing, though. Xander Schauffele is only a shot back. He's at 5-under. Thurston Lawrence as well at 5-under there. That's kind of a name that not too many people know. Wes was discussing him. He's on the DP, the World Tour there, and he's right in the mix of this thing. And that's what the Open Championship brings us. It brings us some unfamiliar faces who can be there at the top of the leaderboard on a Sunday, as we have it right now with Justin Rose and Billy Horschel, the co-leaders at 6-under. We'll keep our eyes on what's going on there. Before we get into the college football, Mike, did you happen to see, I don't know if you were watching yesterday afternoon, the Team USA basketball against South Sudan? They were laying 41
and
a half.
I've been
and they won by 1 point. I'm sure someone's out there who laid 41 and a half and then is watching the game being like, what in the world is happening?
have you been watching my guy? Have you watched him?
It's bad. It's really bad.
He can't move.
Yeah.
I mean, for anybody to be betting the 76ers based on the premise that this guy's an elite player in the league, you're not watching the same game I'm watching. You know, A, conditioning. I just read an article in the New York Times about him where he just feels like he's everything status quo. It's all right in front of him. I mean, he's so unself-aware. Yeah. Conditioning never was brought up in the article. Someone sent it to me. And then when I watch him, I would think most fans that don't pay attention that aren't 76er fans that are watching the Olympic team, they probably feel like, as I do, Anthony Davis is the much better option out there on the court.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Like, I went to the USA-Canada game. Somebody sitting in front of me was saying they need to be starting Anthony Davis over Joel Embiid. Now, they were a Laker fan, of course, but still, like, even if you're a Laker fan or not, I think it's pretty clear, like, who the best big man on Team USA is. And, you know, these things, the politics plays into it.
The ball never – he's impossible to play with. He's a tremendous player, but he's impossible to play with because he plays a position that's only for him, which is 15 feet out. You know, you can't space the floor. You know, he's not a low post center. So, you know, this whole thing, and I mean, Daryl Morey's got his hands full. You know, he's built this team around the concept that Embiid's an elite player. Is he? He's an elite scorer. Is he an elite player? That's another question.
Yeah. He's an elite talent, but as we've seen, like, can he make it through a regular season and postseason? He has not been able to do that since, I mean, goodness, like, what, 2019 was the last time that he was healthy in a playoffs? It's just, it kind of is what comes with the dinner when Joel Embiid is on your team. And for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Go look at the article. Go look at the article in the Times or the Athletic. They're both the same. But go look at it and see he's dunking. He looks in 10 times better shape at Kansas than he does today.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he's almost like a different person at Kansas. Like, it's like a different person when you watch the Kansas tape. It's like, oh, who's this guy? This guy, like, it could be Hakeem Olajuwon 2.0 when he's at Kansas. And now it's just 15-footers at the elbow, you know, three-pointer, step back. And yeah, he's really good at those 15-footers. He's perfected it. But, man, you want a little bit more than what Joel Embiid is giving the Sixers and also what he's giving Team USA. Like, Team USA, they'll be fine. They're going to win gold, I believe. Like, they're -500 to do so. Barring some sort of epic disaster, they should win gold. But maybe yesterday was a little bit of a wake-up call for Team USA, and maybe, just maybe, they shake up that lineup and perhaps maybe put Anthony Davis in the starting lineup instead of Joel Embiid. But that might cause some issues, maybe. So who knows if they go down that path. Steve Kerr, good luck, buddy. At least Paris will be a fun time in about a week or so. But let's discuss discuss college football here, Michael, because we have some futures insights from our friends over at DraftKings, what people have been betting on throughout the course of this summer. And the most bet team in terms of the handle is the Ohio State Buckeyes. 41% of the handle, Ohio State plus 400 to win the college football playoff title. They're 31% of the bets are on the Buckeyes, so a lot of money on Ohio State here. For Georgia, only 17% of the handle, but 31% of the bets are on the Bulldogs. Texas, 6% of the handle at plus 750, also 6% of the bets. Alabama, 5% on both, as well as Oregon at 4% on both. Oregon plus 850, Alabama 14-1 now with Kalen DeBoer in year one in Tuscaloosa. How do you interpret some of those betting splits and the market insights here from our friends at DraftKings?
I just don't think people understand how good Oregon is. Wes mentioned them, you know, Dylan Gabriel playing, that Moore, the young kid who went to UCLA, top five recruit in the country, who transferred from UCLA up there. They have great skill. The offensive line, Dan Lanning's done a really good job. I mean, Georgia's going to be a question mark. Texas, I think, certainly is there. Alabama at 14-1 might be right. It's tough to follow Nick Saban, especially with all the transfers that come in there. But I think Oregon is a little bit undervalued at 850. I think that they'll be able to, and we'll see them play Ohio State, they'll be able to get into the tournament, which is 12 teams. I think there's no question about that. And then from there, we'll see where the injury levels go. But I do think that at 4% of the handle and 4% of the bets, I just think this is a combination of people not understanding the West Coast teams and how good they are.
Yeah, Oregon's really good. I mean, we saw them last year. I mean, if not for the Washington bugaboos that they had, they were one of the best teams in all of college football. I think even after the playoff was announced, the four teams, I think a lot of people, odds makers, still said Oregon one of their four best teams a season ago, despite the two losses to Washington in the regular season and also in the Pac-12 title game here in Las Vegas. I'm looking at the schedule right now for the Ducks. You mentioned it. They play Ohio State. That's a home game Saturday, October 12th. That'll be a massive, massive game. I can't, like this, as weird as it is, as like a West Coast guy, I wanted the Pac-12 to stay together because that's the conference I grew up watching, and I like those kind of regional rivalries. Seeing Oregon and Ohio State playing in October, it's hard to be mad about that, you know? It really is. It's hard to be mad about that sort of matchup.
You just got to shift your mindset. I mean, the hard one's going to be that Cal and Stanford are in the ACC. I mean, how's that working out for you? You know, Cal playing Florida State in the middle. Yeah, I mean, you know, that one's a little bit more difficult for me, but I don't think we're done with the rearrangement. I don't think we're done with all this. You know, the way this NIL is, the way these conferences are going to give money to schools, it's fascinating. The way the schools are rebuilding stadiums. Penn State just got approval to put $750 million into their new stadium, wow, which came at a lot of, you know, a lot of conversation with the alumni and the board of trustees there at Penn State. So, I mean, there's so much money in college football that you either get all in or you're going to have to go all out. And I think that MAC we talked about is one of those conferences where the level of talent isn't out of whack. Mm-hmm. And I think for us as bettors, we can really hone in on that. They play weird days. It's kind of a little bit difficult, but that still money is green. And I think there's a chance, if you understand that conference the best, you can really make some hay.
All tickets cash the same, whether it's the MAC or if it's an Alabama-Auburn game in the Iron Bowl. Like, all the tickets cash the same. And the MAC, we get that Tuesday, Wednesdays. So those are usually fun games, those standalone games in that conference. It's a nice time to kind of highlight some of the Midwest college football that we have in our country there. I do want to ask you about the SEC because Wes brought up Ole Miss as a potential dark horse team to make the college football playoff. A lot of talent with the Rebels there. Do you agree with that?
I don't think they're a dark horse. I'm counting them. I was asked the question the other day on the show is, I count them in. I think to me, Mississippi, Georgia, Texas are the three schools from the Southeast Conference that are going to get in. You know, I'm not certain about Alabama yet. I mean, Milroe, I think, has really improved last year. I think when you watch Milroe play from the beginning of the season when he played against Texas to the end of the year, certainly against Michigan, I think you see great improvement. I think Milroe's really coming on, but I don't know where the rest of the Alabama team's going to fit in. I don't count them out because they are talented. But I do think that this Mississippi team, especially the money they put in, I mean, Ohio State and Mississippi have paid for their teams well.
Yeah, that's the new day in college football. It's the NIL. You go ahead and get some of these talented players to come join your roster, and you can put together some really, really good teams. Real quick before we go to break, do you think we see Arch Manning this season as a starter for Texas?
I mean, if Yush gets hurt. I mean, if Quinn gets hurt, that's the only way. I mean, but the kid stayed. I admire him for staying, but when's he going to play?
It's a big question with the University of Texas. We'll ask that and much more on the other side of Brandon Marcello here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you haven't done so already, make sure you check out the nice appetizer of our NFL betting guide written up by Adam Burke over on VSiN.com. It has previews, picks, and predictions. It's a nice little appetizer for those of you that are looking to see if, hey, should I buy the guide? The answer to that question is yes, but if you want to see an appetizer of it, go to VSiN.com and check out all the other articles up on the site as well. Welcome back. This is the final segment of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi, and Michael, I don't know if you saw over on Twitter or X, DraftKings Sportsbook has tweeted it. I have since retweeted it, but we are so back, buddy. We saw the first video from Kansas City Chiefs training camp. Patrick Mahomes scrambles to find Xavier Worthy deep for the touchdown. It's beautiful to see it on the timeline. It means nothing. They're not even wearing pads, but it's beautiful to see football back on our timeline. The timeline is once again whole.
Yeah, well, we're back, and that's the best part about the July is we know we're back, right?
Yeah,
I think it's awesome, and you know we're gonna there's gonna be so much reaction to that. Oh my God, Worthy's gonna be great, yada yada yada.
Yeah.
But I'll take that for no football. I would rather have the overreaction and the hyper, you know, excitement than to not have and counting the weeks in the off season.
100%. Give me the noise. Give me all the stuff that doesn't matter because it's football and we love football and that's what we're all about here. So I just thought it was fun seeing that scrolling the timeline. I said, oh man, like, cause all the highlights of football are from like last season or from years ago or whatever. But now we're getting stuff that's in 2024 and Xavier Worthy making a nice catch, which might mean absolutely zero once we actually get to the games, but it's fun to see it nonetheless there. Also to give the folks an update on what's happening across the pond over at the Open Championship. Thurston Lawrence still in the lead at 7-under. He is through 10 holes. Justin Rose and now Xander Schauffele has joined Justin Rose in T2. Both of them 6-under through 11. I think Justin Rose is going to win it. That's the prediction that I'll make. I think it'll be Justin Rose
really?
Who wins the Claret Jug.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a proven major winner. I mean, maybe it's been a while since he's won a major. He's been in the mix in some, you know, but I think that this sets up well for him, and this is his time to once again lift the Claret Jug. So I'm going to go with Justin Rose, who right now is plus 260 over at DraftKings. Xander is the favorite, plus 130, as he's only one back. Of course, Xander finally broke through this year at the PGA Championship. Russell Henley, 16-1. Billy Horschel, 28-1. Shane Lowry, now 35-1. But Rose will be my pick, Michael. Who do you think wins it?
You know, I think to me, this is always so hard, but I think it's going to come from the Rose, Scheffley, Lawrence group. I do. I think Henley and everybody else, I think it's hard to make up these strokes on the back nine. Lowry, he's minus two on the day. The one thing we haven't seen, Jason Day had the best day of anybody. He was minus three. He's in at plus one. He's tied for 18th. He moved up 18 spots. He's tied for 15th. So I get the sense that it's going to come down. I mean, if those three players, unless Henley really makes a giant move here, but I think everybody's through 10. Rahm ran out of holes. He really played. He's minus three on the day. So I think all these guys are, you know, and Lawrence is minus four on the day. So yeah. I think it's going to come from Lawrence, Scheffley, or Rose. I think Lawrence is in the driver's seat. He's played really well. I didn't know about him until Wes kind of informed us in the last hour. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's a really good player, as Wes reported, and he's obviously playing his best. You know, it's round two. He shot 74. So for him to come back and shoot 65 on Saturday, he's playing the best on the weekend.
Yeah, 65 on Saturday, and then it'll be 4 under today is really, really impressive. Especially 65 when the conditions were awful yesterday. A good job there by Thurston Lawrence. But I do think it'll be Justin Rose, who's at 3 under. Xander Schauffele also at 3 under as well through the round. But we still have plenty of holes to play over at Royal Troon. But before we get out of here, let's go over some of our blue chips and red chips. And this is a series, an exercise that we do on the GM Shuffle podcast. We encourage everyone, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. We've got a new episode coming up with Chiefs General Manager Brett Veach tomorrow morning. So make sure you're tuned in, dialed in for that one when it drops into your feed. But the blue chips and red chips, I think, is a fun exercise because it gives us an idea as to who the needle movers are in the National Football League. And I think as bettors, we should be keen on that. We should know which players move the needle because we're going to get the injury reports all throughout the regular season. Does this matter? Does this matter? You want to know the guys who do matter. And especially in the cornerback position, the guys that matter, your red chips, L'Jarius Sneed, Paulson Adebo, Deron Bland, Jalen Johnson, and Rasul Douglas. Not the greatest players. Now, they're not the elite guys, but they're still really good, impactful players on the back end.
No question. I mean, Bland, you know, Bland's got 5 touchdowns. I mean, it's hard to ignore the year he had in terms of 9 interceptions, 5 touchdowns. I think part of this group is, too, can they play man-to-man, right? I mean, Sneed was very good for the Chiefs last year playing man-to-man when they needed him. Douglas goes over to Buffalo from Green Bay and plays man-to-man, plays within their system. Jalen Johnson, he's with the, you know, obviously the Bears are more of a cover three team, but still plays effectively. So, you know, all these guys, when it's 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, they can sit down and play really well. Are they the best corners in the league? No, I think they're other guys. And certainly in the blue chip category, the best one is Surtain. And then we go to Sauce Gardner. We don't have Surtain on the list because I miswrote him on the list when we were doing it live on the podcast. But the blue chip guys are really where you could set your defense and really feel good about taking a guy out of a game.
Yeah, and those blue chip guys are Sauce Gardner for the New York Jets, Derek Stingley of the Houston Texans. Those guys, draft classmates from a couple of years ago. The comparisons are there, but both have lived up to their billing. Jalen Ramsey with the Miami Dolphins, Trent McDuffie of the Kansas City Chiefs. He was all pro at slot corner. And then Charvarius Ward of the San Francisco 49ers. Now, these are the cornerbacks. And obviously, you mentioned Patrick Surtain would be in this group as well, but obviously, we don't have him in the graphics since we're doing it a little bit on the fly. Why are these guys the cream of the crop at the cornerback position?
Well, they can play man-to-man, and they're hard to deal with. Like Gardner and Stingley both have length to them, along with Ramsey, right? They're big corners. They're hard to throw the ball. What I think most people don't always understand about coverage is when you have a big man covering a receiver, the quarterback can't see separation like you and I see it on the television, right? Mm-hmm. He can just see color. And so when you have a big corner like Ramsey, Stingley, these guys that have six that are tall, Gardner, that have length to them, right? They don't have to be 4.32. They even though they can, all these guys can run well, their arm length makes up for that lack of 1 millisecond of a 40 time, and it's hard to throw the ball over them. And one of the things that you have to be a great corner in the National Football League is balance. You got to be able to jump. One of the things you look for in the NBA or in college basketball is, can a guy jump in balance? You know, to go get a rebound. Most great rebounders are always in balance. And it's one of the things that great corners have is the ability to jump at the right time, or else if you're on the wrong foot and you can't jump when the ball's in the air and you're an undersized corner, even though you have the guy covered, it's a completed pass. So these guys that have this height. Now, McDuffie, it's going to be interesting because he played in the slot. He understood his leverage points in the slot very well. Now he moves outside. You know, now it's a little bit more of an island. You don't have as many leverage points as you do when you play inside, because you can get help from the inside safeties or from the linebackers if you play outside technique. So that's not to say McDuffie's not going to be a good player. He is. It's just going to be a different position for him.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit of an adjustment period, and it just shows you the intricacies between slot corner and boundary corner. Those guys, it's a little bit different. Even though you're playing cornerback, it's almost like two different positions, one versus the other there. Yeah. Let's get to the safety position. We got a couple minutes left here in the program. Your redshirt safety, Xavier McKinney, comes to the Green Bay Packers from the New York Giants. Tyrann Mathieu for the New Orleans Saints. Minkah Fitzpatrick with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Geno Stone from the Ravens now to the Cincinnati Bengals. And Alohi Gilman with the Los Angeles Chargers.
Yeah, I mean, look, and that most people would say where, you know, Chargers, you know, I mean, you know, he's the best safety of the Chargers. And I would say, yeah, I mean, based on last year, when you keep expecting guys to play at a level that they didn't, Geno Stone had 6 interceptions. He was huge for the Ravens. He's going to be huge for that. Minkah Fitzpatrick was hurt quite a bit. So, you know, I think ultimately, you know, that Fitzpatrick is going to move into the other category. There's no question about that. But to me, the safeties, McKinney's very good for the Giants. We don't hear them talk enough about McKinney on the broadcast at all, especially considering how well he played for them.
Yeah, he'll be good for that Green Bay defense. The blue chip cream of the crop at safety, Jesse Bates with the Falcons, Antoine Winfield Jr. with Tampa, Jabril Peppers with the Patriots, Javon Holland with Miami, and then Kyle Hamilton for the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, I think Peppers has come a long way. I think he's the one guy that has really improved his game and has really made a huge difference in how he's played. Kyle Hamilton and Holland, I think Hamilton is used in the system perfectly. Winfield obviously got paid, and so did Bates, and those guys really play well, and they get their defense aligned.
Yeah, and we'll continue to do this series throughout the rest of training camp here. We also did the off-ball linebackers in a recent episode of the GM Shuffle. We encourage everyone to check that out. And we're getting closer to the edge, guys, defensive tackles, and then we'll flip to the offensive side of the ball, offensive linemen, running backs, receivers, and ultimately quarterbacks, which is everybody likes to debate that topic. But that does it for this edition of the Lombardi Line. Michael, enjoy the rest of your Sunday, man.
Thank you, Femi. You too. Enjoy the golf.
All right. Good luck with the butts.